Chapter 6. Green Behaviour. Why change is so difficult and how to get around it. How are we going to do this? It's not urgent, right? The green person is the most common. You'll meet him virtually everywhere. What's the easiest way to explain who he is? Well, I would like to describe him as being the average of all the other colours. Please don't interpret that as something negative. Keep in mind what this truly implies. While reds are stressed performance seekers, yellows are creative bon vivant guys, and blues are perfectionist knights of Excel spreadsheets, greens are the most balanced. They counterbalance the other more extreme behavioural traits in an elegant way. Hippocrates called them phlegmatic people. The Aztecs called them earth people. Calm, leisurely, and easygoing are some words that could also describe them. It's just a matter of stating the facts. Not everyone can or should be extreme. Otherwise, we would never get anything done. If everyone were a driven leader, there would be no one left to be led. If everyone were an enthusiastic entertainer, there would be no one to amuse. And if everyone were a detail-oriented perfectionist, there wouldn't be anything to keep in order. This means that greens don't stick out in the same way as others do, and they often lend serenity to a situation. Where reds and yellows start off in top gear, greens are significantly calmer. And where blues get caught up in details, greens try to feel their way to what is right. If you have a friend who is green, he'll never forget your birthday. He won't begrudge you your successes, and he won't try to take the spotlight off you by reeling off his own stories. He won't try to outdo you, and he will never pester you with new and drastic demands. Nor will he see you as a competitor if you were ever placed in that situation. He won't take command unless he's been told to do so. And he won't... Just a minute, please, you might be thinking. That's just a lot of things he doesn't do. So what does he do? You can't ignore the fact that greens are more passive than others. They're not as driven as reds, not as resourceful as yellows, and not as orderly as blues. This describes most of the population. For this very reason, they are easy to deal with. They let you be yourself. They don't demand much, and they never kick up a fuss unnecessarily. Children with green features are usually described as being little angels. They eat when they're supposed to. They sleep when they're supposed to. They do their homework when they're supposed to. But it's not just that. Greens will not offend people if they can avoid it. They'd rather not offend anyone at all. And they won't talk back if the boss makes a strange decision. At least not to his face, that is. During the coffee break, it may be somewhat different, but more on that later. They usually strive to fit in, which makes them more balanced people. They're ideal for calming down confused yellows, for example. And they're excellent at warming up blues, who on occasion can indeed be a tad too cold. We often hang out with a family where the husband is yellow and loves to horse around and take centre stage. He comes up with amusing games and is more than happy to answer any questions himself. Everyone else is his audience, and he never steps out of the spotlight. His wife is green, calm, composed, and as laid back as can be. When he jumps around and frolics, these are middle-aged people, she sits quietly on the sofa and smiles. She's just as entertained as everyone else by his antics. When I ask her if she ever gets tired of her comical husband, she sometimes replies quietly, "But he's having so much fun." This is a typical grin trait. They're very tolerant towards other people's more singular behaviour. Is the picture becoming clearer? Greens are the people you might not think about. Most of us, that is. Some simple basics. Green people are kindness personified. You can expect a helping hand whenever you need it. They are pronounced relational people who will do everything within their power to save your relationship. And they will invest lifelong. They will keep track of when your birthday is, when your partner's birthday is, when your children's birthdays are, etc. It wouldn't surprise me if they even know when your cat first saw the light of day. It's often said that greens are the best listeners. And this is true. A green will always be more interested in you than in himself. And if perchance he should be interested in himself, he would never dream of showing it. You often find greens in the public sector, where they help others, with no concern for personal gain. They are also pronounced team players. The team, the group, the family, always comes before the individual. And I would even say that societies consisting of greens will always take care of the sick and the weak. They will not leave a friend in need. You can call them at any time. They always offer a shoulder to cry on. Change isn't their greatest strength, even though change isn't completely foreign to them. If you can simply justify the change and give him enough time, even a green will be prepared to try new things. But a green will remind you that you always know what you have, but you never know what you might end up with. The grass is not automatically greener on the other side, so to speak. Green people often see themselves as friendly, considerate, predictable, discreet, calm, pleasant, stable, thoughtful, reliable, patient, team player, good listener, best pal in the world. As I've already said, these are naturally friendly people. When they tell you that they sincerely care about how you're doing, you can trust that they lie awake sleepless for your sake. Just like yellows, greens are relationship people, and their interest in others is genuine and authentic. If you ask a group of people if anyone is prepared to lend a hand and no one steps up to help, a green will jump in and shout, "Choose me." Why? Because he didn't want to leave you in the lurch. He knows that if you don't get any help, you'll feel bad. And even though he can be passive, he's always prepared to help a friend. I still remember a young woman I worked with at a consulting firm years ago. Admittedly, Maya was certainly blue as well, but above all, she was green. Her problem was obvious. When someone asked for help, she always said yes. Every time. It was difficult to find her desk due to her workload, but she organised everything in the end. We could always rely on her assistance, handling all the things the rest of us had simply forgotten about. She had a warm and friendly smile, so we asked her to work in reception and have the first contact with new clients. She never failed to serve coffee, fix the cushions, or keep track of how long clients had been waiting. Maya never forgot anyone's birthday or anniversary, or their wives or children's for that matter. She frequently sent short emails to all of us stressed-out consultants, reminding us that we had families who also needed to be looked after. Sure, we could take care of our own lives, but in her kindness and thoughtfulness, Maya went out of her way to help. It was natural for her, and whenever we asked her to take it easy and take care of herself for a change, she almost felt offended. She wanted to take care of us. It simply made her feel good. Of course, there were limits, and Maya constantly ran the risk of someone taking advantage of her huge heart. But when properly balanced, this selflessness is a beautiful quality. Greens do this naturally. When having coffee, it's quite normal for you to ask the people with you if they would like a refill. When other colours would likely take their empty cups to the coffee maker, greens would simply fetch the coffee carafe and refill everyone's cup. A green wants to stay on good terms with everyone, so he'll even help people he doesn't really like that much. Otherwise, there might be some kind of hullabaloo. He thinks well of most people and is confident in others' abilities. Sometimes he does this so intensely that it ends badly. But normally, that's the fault of the other person, not the green himself. He is so good-hearted that now and then others can take advantage of him. Lhasa, a good friend of mine, is a truly genuine friend. It makes no difference how much he has to do. If anyone needs a helping hand, Lhasa is there, ready to support him. Sometimes, in Lhasa's eagerness to help with other people's work, he even forgets to do his own. On weekends, he drives his own and others' children everywhere they want to go. He helps people move. He lends out his tools without people even needing to ask. He listens if you call and complain about something. This all takes a huge amount of time, but he enjoys it. Once they've said they'll do something, you can rest assured that it will be done. If a green says that he will do something, you can be confident that he'll do it. If it's in his power to deliver, he will. It won't be done in the shortest amount of time possible, but it will show up in your inbox roughly within the expected time frame. Greens don't want to be caught failing to deliver, as this might cause trouble for others. And because they're good team players, they don't want to do anything that can cause problems for the team. Team comes before self. The team being the company, crew, football team, or family. For the green, it's natural to look after everyone else around them. The reason why everyone works so well with greens is a topic for debate. In some situations, it's simply because they don't like conflict. Mostly, however, it's because they're controlled by their desire to make those around them happy and satisfied. If they can please you with a job well done, they'll do it. The desire to please others verges on being a driving force for greens. It comes naturally and requires no effort. And this selflessness is accompanied by an exalted serenity that lowers the stress level of those around them. We don't want any unpleasant surprises. It's good to know what's going to happen. Every time. You can always count on a green person. In some organisations, it's a requirement to have reliable employees. Creativity and ingenuity are not at the top of the wish list. In short, you simply need people who understand the job and get it done, without a lot of fuss or drama. Then, you hire greens. They constitute the stable core who will do the job well. They don't have problems taking orders. as long as the orders are formulated in an appealing fashion. Greens enjoy stability and a certain predictability in the workplace, or in the home, or with a family, just about everywhere. Whenever trouble is brewing, maybe due to a recession or when new managers take over, we'll see all kinds of interesting behaviour in a group. Reds, who never listen to the whole message, just rush off to do what they believe needs to be done. Unless, of course, they're busy yelling at the management because they don't agree with their decisions. Yellows start wild discussions and inform absolutely everyone about their take on what happened. Instead of working, they'll debate the news until it's time to leave the office. Blues will sit at their desks and begin the bureaucratic paperwork, formulating 500,000 questions that no one knows the answers to yet. Greens, they just murmur. If the management has avoided seriously sabotaging their sense of security, they'll trundle on without complaining. There's no point in making a lot of fuss and bother about it. Might as well keep doing what you were before. This, in fact, makes things much easier. We'll get to how we help Greens to change direction, but they're great at keeping calm and carrying on. You'll always know how a Green will respond to some questions because he doesn't change his opinion very often. A few years ago, I coached Gregor. He'd been a CEO for several years, and his management team consisted solely of Green middle managers. He used to enjoy playing a little game when launching new ideas. He wrote little notes with the answers he thought he would get from each person. No from Anna, yes from Stefan, maybe from Bertil. Right every time. Gregor knew them very well and knew how they would react to his proposals. This wouldn't have been the case with yellows. They don't even know how they're going to respond when opportunities arise. Exciting? Sure. But it's exhausting for those around them. With green associates, however, you don't need to worry. Who, me? I'm not important. Forget that you even saw me. For every green, the group will always come first. Team before self. Remember that. This is a fundamental truth for a green, and it shouldn't be challenged too strongly. The working group, the team, the club and the family, all these different groups are important for a green. He often disregards his own needs if the group gets what it needs. You may think that groups consist of people, and if each individual is satisfied, the group as a whole will be content. This might happen, but then the focus would be individual rather than collective. The way a green sees it, if the group feels good, every individual also feels good. Here, the green's thoughtfulness becomes apparent. He has infinite regard for those around him. This is partly the reason why it's difficult to get a straight answer from a green. He's always trying to satisfy everyone else. Let me tell you a rather striking story. One Sunday, a few years ago, a colleague whom I didn't know that well called me. I'd only been working with Christopher for a few months, but I hadn't really figured the guy out yet. So when he called me one Sunday morning, I was surprised. I saw who it was, but I had no idea what he wanted from me. He greeted me pleasantly and asked me what I was doing. I'd just bought a new house at that time and was busy renovating. Christopher asked what was on the agenda this particular Sunday. And I remember that I said I was worried about the boiler. It was early winter. The temperature was just below freezing, and one of the circulation pumps didn't really work as it should. Because colder weather was definitely on the way, I wondered if the pump could cope with a major cold snap. Being a green, Christopher asked a number of questions and gave me lots of good advice. He'd once had a similar boiler, and besides, he knew a plumber who he might be able to ask to come by and have a look. If I was interested, of course. Christopher and I chatted for a while, and I became increasingly puzzled about why he had actually called me. He asked me where I lived. I gave him the address, and he promised to write it down and give it to his plumber friend. Then, as a kind of by the way, he asked me if I had any plans to go into town that day. I lived about 25 miles from the office and hadn't intended to go to work that Sunday. I explained this to Christopher. We chatted a little while longer, and in the end, I finally asked him straight out what he really wanted. Then, he revealed that he was standing outside the office in his T-shirt because he'd accidentally locked himself out when he'd popped out to fetch some lunch. I looked at the thermometer. 30 degrees with light snow. We'd been talking for about 15 minutes. I got into the car and saved him from freezing to the bone. Everyone else is more important. A green never asks for anything. I know exactly what you mean. They say greens are introverts. That is, that they're active in their inner world. This means that they don't talk just for the sake of talking. When you're quieter than those around you, it's natural that you listen. And greens will listen. They are interested in you and your ideas. Unlike reds, who only listen when there is something to be gained from it. Or yellows, who usually don't listen at all, although they will normally deny this fact. Greens hear what you're actually saying. They have a genuine ear for human problems. They might not offer any suggestions or solutions, but they understand what you've told them. Don't assume that means that they agree with you, but they are good listeners. So far, you've probably tried to puzzle all the pieces together. Where do the different colours fit in? What kind of job would be best for each of them? These are good questions, even if there are no simple answers. One observation that often arises when I work with these issues in different organisations is the reds and yellows, in particular, must be good at retail and selling. This is true for sure. But greens are often overlooked. We always teach salespeople to talk less and listen more, something greens already do quite naturally. Helena was a seller I coached a few years ago. She was green and very gentle in her ways. Most people didn't understand how she survived in that daunting industry. But I have a theory. She once told me about a time when she met a tough chief executive everyone had tremendous respect for. No one in the entire company had managed to sell anything to him. But after a little coaching from me, Helena was determined to have a go. So she arranged a meeting. They ran into each other in the parking lot at the restaurant where they were to meet for lunch. The stern executive cruised into the lot in a vintage car from the late 60s. Beautiful, shiny, and obviously very special. Helena said the only thing she could think of, wow. Do you like cars? Asked the executive, before they'd even greeted each other. Helena nodded. Then he told her about the car, how much he'd spent to restore it, the paintwork and alloys, the engine. He showed her what it looked like under the hood. Helena nodded and murmured approval and hoped he wouldn't ask her any questions, since she couldn't tell the difference between a Ford and a Chevrolet. But she didn't interrupt. She just listened. After that, it was easy. They sat down and he asked to see the sales agreement. How did she do it? By doing nothing at all, except for one thing, listening. He signed before the food was even served. Conclusions on green behaviour. Okay, do you have any greens in your family? Highly likely. Mr. Rogers, Gandhi, Michelle Obama, and Jimmy Carter are some well-known people with elements of green. And, yes, Jesus. There's a guy who knew how to help others. Chapter 7. Blue Behaviour. In Pursuit of Perfection. Why are we doing this? What's the science behind it? The last of the four colours is an interesting fellow. You've probably met him. He doesn't make a fuss about himself, but he does keep tabs on what's happening around him. While a green will just go with the flow, a blue has all the right answers. In the background, he analyses, classifies, evaluates, assesses. You know you've met a blue if you visit someone's house and everything is organised in a particular way. Clear labels and names on each hook so that the children will know exactly where to hang up their jackets. Dinner menus divided into 6-week intervals to ensure a balanced diet stuck on the refrigerator door. If you look at his tools, you'll find that everything has its own spot and nothing is out of place. Why? A blue DIY guy always puts things back where they belong. He is also a pessimist. Sorry, a realist. He sees errors and he sees risks. He's the melancholic who closes the circle of behaviour. Reserved, analytical, and detail-oriented are some words you might associate with a blue. Excuse me, but that's not quite accurate. We all have a friend like that. Think about it. You're sitting in a restaurant with your friends. You're discussing cats, football, or space rockets. Someone throws out a random comment. It may be your red friend, who claims that the Patriots have been to the Super Bowl 11 times. It can be the yellow, who cheerfully claims that, as a child, he lived in the same block as Will Smith in West Philly. Your blue buddy clears his throat and, in a gentle voice, says that the Patriots have actually only been to the Super Bowl 10 times, with their first appearance after the 1985 season and 8 times since 2001. And that Will Smith actually grew up in Winfield, which is well north of the block in question, and a half-hour walk from the lovely Centennial Arboretum. In addition, without blinking an eye, the good friend adds, "It's interesting to note that in the Super Bowl pre-game coin toss of the past 51 games, the outcome has been tails 27 times and heads 24 times. And based on past statistics, the winner of the coin toss is slightly less likely to win the game overall." You just have to give up, boys. This guy simply knows everything. He doesn't make a big deal about it. But his way of presenting facts makes it difficult for you to call them into question. He knows where he found the info and can go fetch the book to prove it. That's the way it is with blues. They know how things stand before they open their mouth. They've Googled, read the owner's manual, and checked the dictionary. and afterwards they present a report in full. But an important thing to note, if the question doesn't come up, it's unlikely that your blue buddy will say anything on the subject. He has no need to tell everyone about what he knows. Of course, a blue doesn't know everything. No one can. But you can usually bank on the fact that what he says is correct. Blue people often see themselves as accurate, cautious, correct, detail-oriented, logical, methodical, orderly, quality-oriented, reflective, systematic, thorough, unassuming. Did you notice anything about this list? Of course you did. This time, I listed the different characteristics in alphabetical order, something a blue would most certainly appreciate. However, I might get in trouble because I don't discuss each and every one of these characteristics individually on the subsequent pages. To all blue individuals who are listening to this, who have probably jotted down a little note in the margin to go to my website to look for possible explanations for this blunder, I just want to say that I didn't mean to cause any strife. It's not a big deal. I was just doing my job. How can a know-it-all be unassuming? It's impressively modest to avoid making a fuss, even if you know everything. It's rare that a wholly blue person would feel the need to stand on the rooftops or to toot his own horn in order to make it clear to the world who the real expert is. It's usually sufficient that you, the blue, are clear about who knows best. There are downsides to this modesty. More than once, I've stood in the middle of a crowd of people as we all tried to puzzle through a problem together. On one such occasion, a blue came forward after 2 hours and casually pointed out the answer. For him, it was never really a problem at all. He knew a thing or two, but because blues often miss the big picture, they don't always act immediately. I asked him why he didn't say anything 2 hours earlier, and like a typical blue, he said, "Well, you never asked." It would be easy to feel aggravated by such a comment. But at the same time, I understood him. It's more my problem than his that he wasn't invited to join the discussion. He knew that he knew the answer, and that was good enough. There's also no need to cheer, applaud, or call a blue up to the podium when he's done something tremendous in an amazing way. Sure, it doesn't really do any harm to cheer. He'll just nod, accept the praise and the prize check, and then return to his desk, where he'll continue working on the next project. But he may well wonder what the fuss was really all about. He was only doing his job. "Excuse me, but where did you read that? And what edition was it?" A blue can rarely get too many facts or have too many pages of fine print. People say that God is in the details, and I can imagine that it was a blue who first said that. No detail is too small to be noticed. Cutting corners is simply not an option for a blue. "Hold up," you might say. Not keeping track of every single tiny detail isn't really the same thing as cutting corners. But if you ask a blue, it is. Not having full control is the same thing as not having any control at all. What do we get by cutting corners? How can you possibly justify it? It doesn't work like that. Tell a blue that he can ignore the details of the new contract and skip to the last 30 paragraphs, There's nothing important in that bit. And he'll stare at you very attentively and wonder about your mental capabilities. As usual, he won't necessarily say anything. He'll just completely ignore what you said. He would rather burn the midnight oil checking all the facts of the case than miss the slightest detail. A few years ago, I tried to sell a leadership program to the CEO of a company in the packaging industry. He was blue. There was no doubting that. His emails were long-winded and a little dry, and for our first meeting, he'd set aside 50 minutes. Not an hour, not three quarters of an hour, but 50 minutes. There was a reason for this. After the meeting, he would have lunch, and the dining room was 8 minutes away, plus a visit to the gents for about 2 minutes. A 50-minute meeting would get him there right in time. The first time we met, he deposited me in a specific chair by a specific corner at the visitor's desk. He didn't ask if I had any difficulty getting there, which I did. The address was totally impossible. He offered neither coffee nor tea. He didn't smile when he greeted me. He examined my business card very carefully. After going through the company's needs, I explained that I would go back to my office to put a quote together. Once back at my desk, I brooded about how I should go about it. Normally, my proposals were 10 to 12 pages long, but I knew that wouldn't be sufficient in this case. Instead, I put my nose to the grindstone and wrote over 35 pages. I mailed a hard copy of the quote to him, since for a blue, the written and printed word means much more than the spoken or digital. After a week or so, I followed the whole thing up with a phone call. They were interesting ideas, the CEO said, but he was ready to go further. Could he now get the full quote? What he actually said was, "Is there any more material?" I remember scratching my head. In my opinion, I'd described the program rather well in the proposal. Each stage had an agenda, a clear goal, and a defined purpose. I'd given some background information, references, and citations. As a seller, you can't give up. So I was back at it, adding every detail I could think of. The second time, I put together at least 85 pages. Each item broken down into two-hour intervals, even more background, sample exercises, analysis tools, templates, the works. Details on a level that would have made a yellow throw up. Pleased with myself, I sent over the whole caboodle. It took several weeks before I heard from the CEO. I asked if he was ready to make a decision, and he asked, "Is there more material?" Well, this time he wanted to come to my office. For 90 minutes, we sat on the same side of the table in the conference room at my office and went through the table of contents in the proposal. He had drawn up the general terms and conditions. Read the fine print on legal paper, and each section was full of questions and notes. Afterwards, he said, with a totally expressionless face, that it was the best meeting he'd been at for a long time. But what he really wondered was, is there any more material? I sent him off and sat down for a while and pondered. More material? No problem. I shared the whole training folder. This was before e-learning and virtual classrooms. At least 300 pages covering every 15-minute session during the 15 days of training in five different stages of leadership. This was all the material there was. even with information about when coffee breaks should be slotted in, exactly what questions should be asked of the individuals during training, how the room should be furnished, the works. I can certify there were no gaps. I thought that if I took all this and rammed it down his throat, he would be satisfied at last. After a month, he asked if there was any more material. There was not. A common misconception is that blues are unable to make decisions. But that's not the case. It wasn't that this CEO was pushing the decision into some time in the future, or that he couldn't decide. He simply had no need to decide. For him, the process leading up to the decision was significantly more interesting. And he just wondered if there was any more material. Why some people have to sleep on things for so long, you wonder if they've gone into hibernation. The preceding example also illustrates another important characteristic blue behaviour. They're generally very cautious. They often think safety first. Where a red or yellow would take a wild chance, a blue will hold off and consider everything one more time. There may be more factors to take into account, right? You need to get to the bottom of things before you act. This can manifest itself in various ways. It's a fact that, for the blue, the trip is more important than the destination. Exactly the opposite of a red. Obviously, this amount of caution can result in no decisions being made at all. And it also means that blues rarely take any major risks. Never taking any risks ensures a predictable life. We can probably agree on that. I'm not saying anything about how exciting and inspiring it would be. I'm just stating the facts. Sometimes, a blue can even completely refrain from starting something because he can't assess the risks. I once met a blue seller who had trained as an engineer. His motto was that the best deal is often the one you didn't make. Risk assessment is a complex thing, and who knows what dangers are lurking out there. A blue generally solves everything by creating advanced systems that manage the possible risks that may arise. They set 3 alarm clocks. They leave 2 hours early when one would be enough. They check and recheck the children's backpacks before school in the morning, even though they packed them the night before and no one has touched the backpacks during the night. They triple check that the keys are in their pocket, and of course they are. Where else would they be? The benefits of this are evident. Blues won't be taken aback by unexpected events in the same way others would be. And in the long run, they save a lot of time. It doesn't matter if it's easier. It's still not right. Things can't be allowed to go wrong. That's all there is to it. Quality is all that matters. When a blue individual thinks his work runs the risk of being shoddy or low quality, things come to a standstill. Everything must be checked out. Why has the quality declined? Running the risk of generalising, I would say that a fair amount of engineers have distinct blue traits. Accurate, systematic, fact-oriented, and quality conscious. I can't know for certain, but I would imagine that Toyota, the Japanese car manufacturer, probably has a good proportion of blue engineers among its employees. They have a policy that you must always ask why 5 times to ensure quality and get to the heart of the issue. I would say that this is a typical blue approach. In addition to the Japanese mentality, which is very long-term and rather blue in expression, So let's say someone discovers an oil stain on the floor. A red approach might be to lambast the person closest to him and then order him to mop up the stain. A yellow sees the stain and then forgets it, but 2 days later is surprised when he slips on it. The green also sees the stain and feels a little bit of guilt because it poses a problem and everyone is ignoring it. A blue would ask, "Why is there an oil spill?" The answer may be that a gasket is leaking. The answer, of course, is unsatisfactory for a blue. Why is the gasket leaking? Because it's poor quality. Why do we have poor quality gaskets in our factory? Because the purchasing department was told to save money. We bought cheap gaskets instead of tight sealed gaskets. But who asked us to save money and compromise on quality? This is the way he goes on. Maybe the problem will resolve itself. Maybe we'll get a report of what went wrong. But nothing is done to fix the problem. In the end, the blue solution might be to review our purchasing strategies instead of just mopping up the oil on the floor. My point is this. A blue is prepared to dive deep to get everything exactly 100% correct. Blues argue that if they're going to do something, they must do it correctly. And vice versa. If a task isn't worth being done properly, then it's not worth doing at all. Furthermore, because blues usually find it difficult to lie, they will always point out the defects they uncover, even defects that may reflect poorly on them. I clearly remember discussions my parents had when I was a child. We moved from time to time, and usually our house had to be sold, with everything that entailed. Dad, the engineer, would, of course, do all the work himself, and he managed the viewings personally. My mum was always upset that he began each viewing by pointing out all the flaws and shortcomings of the house. It leaked here and there, and some paint had flaked off behind the sofa. "Why are you telling them that?" my mother wondered. "Because this and that is wrong," Dad replied. "Sure, but do you have to tell that to the prospective buyers? Now they may never want to buy the house." He didn't understand the problem. As a very honourable and honest person, he couldn't hide the faults he knew were there. He could live with the fact that we rarely made a huge profit on those deals. He'd been honest about the house, because that's how it should be done. If the trail doesn't match the map, there's something wrong with the trail. Logical and rational thinking is critical to a blue. Out with all the feelings, as much as possible, and in with the logic. Of course, blues can't turn off their feelings completely. No one can. But they like to say they use rational arguments when making decisions. They value logical thinking highly, but they can very easily become depressed when things don't go their way. And depression has nothing to do with logic and everything to do with feelings. Few people can repeat the same task an infinite number of times in exactly the same way like blues can. They have a unique ability to precisely follow instructions to the letter without questioning, provided they understood and approved of it in the beginning. How do they do this without getting bored or careless? Well, it's logical. If a particular method works, why change it? While a yellow or red would find new ways of doing something simply because they were bored, a blue repeats the same thing time and time again. Consider how a blue would put together a piece of furniture from IKEA. If there's a manual, Then, of course, you have to read it thoroughly before you start. Reds, confident that they can easily do this, start screwing and putting together the various parts without even looking to see what's in the rest of the box. Yellows tear up everything, exclaiming that it's going to be great fun to get the furniture in place. They live in the future and can already see a clear picture of the new cabinet on the right wall of the bedroom with Grandma's tablecloth and a lovely vase of tulips on it. They put each part together a little bit haphazardly, without much effort. They'll screw in a few screws where it looks logical, only to skip to another part of the cabinet. A green DIY guy leans the enormous box against the wall and has a coffee break. There really isn't a hurry. What does a blue do? He reads the instructions twice, examines what everything looks like, and confirms that the different pieces of the new cabinet match the pictures in the instructions. With a slightly damp, not too wet, cloth, he carefully wipes down all the different parts because they're likely to be dusty. He tallies the number of screws in the box so that he will not be surprised at the end if anything is missing. And if there are any parts left over, he may very well take the whole thing apart again. It may take a little extra time for a blue to put together his cabinet, but once it's done, you can be sure that it will stand forever. The devil is in the details. A few years ago, I wanted to renovate the patio in my yard. Because I like working with my hands, in contrast to just talking every day, I thought I would do the job myself, or at least part of it. My dad, well over 70 at the time, was going to help out because he knew that I was pressed for time. Easier said than done. To provide a sturdy foundation, we were going to lay down gravel. Dad arrived a few minutes before the dump truck with all the gravel. He had his own wheelbarrow with him, specially designed to manoeuvre gravel, and a special shovel that he always used for similar purposes. He didn't understand why I was standing there with my regular shovel. Everyone knew that you had to use special shovels for things like this. The truck came and dropped a hefty pile of gravel in the driveway. I imagined a few days of shoveling before me, and to be honest, it made me feel a little tired. But I was still ready to take on the challenge. My old dad? He picked up a bit of gravel between his fingers, smelled it, felt it, and assessed its quality. After grunting somewhat, which I interpreted as approval, he began to assess the pile itself. He measured the height of the mound with his hand. He paced how large the circumference was. I asked him what he was doing. He didn't answer, but mumbled numbers under his breath. 180 high, 5 metres in circumference, gradient, After 30 seconds, he said that there were between 8.75 and 9.25 cubic metres of gravel in the driveway. I confided to him that it was actually 9 cubic metres. Exactly. Dad asked rather sceptically how I knew that. I pointed. "It's written on the truck," I said. Dad was mildly impressed. I asked if he wanted to count each piece of gravel individually. He didn't deem that to be necessary. For hours, he walked around the site and packed and pressed, raked the gravel, smoothing everything until he thought that everything was in order. He used a level, plumb line, water, all the means at his disposal, so that nothing could go wrong. The gravel needed to be laid at an incline of exactly 1 centimetre per metre. Why, you ask? It says so in the book. Because he was a construction engineer, he knew the book by heart. 1 centimetre per metre, exactly. Who knows what terrible consequences could result if you were careless about that? Consider the difference between 1 centimetre and roughly 1 centimetre. The former is precise, the latter is imprecise. Roughly 1 centimetre, it could be up to 2 centimetres if things went bad. From a 1 centimetre to a 2 centimetre gradient, that's a difference of no less than 100%, a huge deviation. The funny thing about this story is not really the event itself, but what happened when Dad read about it in the first edition of this book. He argued that that's not how it really happened. He corrected the story on several points and claimed that the truck had held 12 cubic metres, not 9. He also insists that he's not purely blue, and there might just be something in that. He's like that with everything. At home, if there are any technical questions about a television, a car, a microwave oven or a cell phone, out comes the manual. He always replies, "It says here that..." Why do you think they wrote this stuff if it's not meant to be done that way? How do you reply to that? How do you argue with the instruction manual? It's impossible to find arguments that a true blue will accept. My dad will also stop at a red light in the middle of the night, even if he's the only one within a 10-mile radius, because that's the way you do it. The great value of this approach is obvious. He will never be fooled. He will always get what he paid for. It gives him an inner peace, because he knows he's checked everything out very accurately. If you know any blues, I'm sure you will agree with me. Under normal circumstances, they're very calm and balanced. Probably because they keep tabs on everything. Silence is golden. Introvert. Enough said. I could stop there. Many blues I've met don't say a single word unnecessarily. That's just the way it is. Does that mean they have nothing to say? Don't they have opinions about things? Not at all. They're just very, very introverted. Blues are the calm, stable individuals the Aztecs equated with the sea, the element of water. Quiet on the outside, but under the surface, anything could be happening. Introverted doesn't mean silent. It means active in the inner world. But the effect of this is often quiet. In general, my advice is to listen attentively when blues do actually talk, because they've usually thought through what they say. So why are they so silent? Among other things, it's because they, unlike yellows, don't feel the need to be heard. Sitting in a corner and not being seen or heard makes no difference to them. They're observers, spectators, more than central characters. They can find themselves at the edge of a group where they observe and record everything that is said. And don't forget this. According to a blues values, being silent is something positive. If you have nothing to say, keep quiet. Conclusions on blue behaviour. Do you know everything about blues? Have you identified some blues in your life? Bill Gates and Albert Einstein both use their attention to detail and meticulous nature to build their success. We also have Sandra Day O'Connor and Condoleezza Rice. And of course, from the fictional world, Mr. Spock from Star Trek is the perfect blue. All logic, rationality and intellect. Even if a few of the jokes slip past him.